Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we have investigative journalist Alex Berenson. You've seen his work out there talking about some of this COVID stuff. Very interesting and controversial. So we'll get into that with him. He's been on the show before. And we'll do Eat Your Feelings as well. First, I'll tell you about Madison Reed. That's Madison Reed Mister. And Madison Reed's been around for a long time, and they've been taking care of the ladies. And now they're taking care of the boys. This stuff works. It's good. It doesn't have that shoe polish, Sharpie look. It's natural. You can do it on your beard. You can color your beard, color your hair. I use this product. Put a little in your hands. Just rub it together. The kit comes with gloves. Put a little dollop on. Put a little dollop and rub in the activator. When you're done with the color, match your color online at their website. And pow, Bob's your uncle. Looking newer and shinier than a new dime. Madison Reed Mister, right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMister.com. And use code Adam10 for 10% off plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam10.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for a brand new month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a download of Basic Cable Commentary Presents the award-winning Showgirls, a migraine stick, perfect for your hangovers, an ACS logo pop, stick it on your phone, set it and forget it, a keto-friendly and Finney-approved chipmunk cookie to stave off hunger without a burrito, and, of course, a bottle of your choice. The $60 value is yours for only $25. Head to CorollaDrinks.com to get 1 month or keep the shipments coming. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the co-founder of New Discourses, James Lindsay. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now extending a hearty fuck you to that TikTok cranberry juice guy for putting Fleetwood Mac back on the charts, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
Cool.
We may be talking to Alex Berenson, who we've had on the show before. He's an interesting journalist investigator. Possibly, but we'll see. It's a little bit pending. I will tell you that I had an interesting coinkadink with Dr. Drew. I'd be curious what you guys thought of it. Now, this is a coincidence. This is nothing to do with Drew's ability to perceive humor and then crush it into a fine powder. This is just an interesting coincidence, but you have to think about it or see it through the lens of this has never happened before. I mean, you guys know, and Drew knows, there are many things we discuss over and over again, and if it was about the Love Boat or Red Turn Arrows, then it wouldn't fall under the heading of coincidence. But this was an exchange we had from our Adam and Dr. Drew show. I think it aired today, and it was, again, it's not going to make a good story to tell your spouse, but it is interesting, and I'm curious if you think there's any connection or it's just pure happenstance and coincidence. So here... Or we'll play the clip from our show where he was talking about Ryan Holiday, right? And who writes those stoicism books, which, by the way, boy, now more than ever, stoicism, man. Get back into the Stoics. But I'll play the clip. Here it is.
100 years ago, when he was a college student, by accident at an event, he came up to me and asked me what I was reading.
Mm-hmm. I went, really? You want to know what I'm reading? Well, I just happened to be reading this book called The Enchiridion by a guy named Epictetus.
Everyone always asks me what I'm wearing or who I'm wearing. I think that's who you're wearing. It's Norton.
Who are you wearing?
Vera Wang.
Oh, wow. Good for you. But is that the cologne or is that the shirt?
It's a shirt.
Yeah, I have Vera Wang cologne on, strangely.
Do you?
Yeah.
Really?
Really.
Are you physically wearing Vera Wang right now cologne?
Indeed. That is a fact.
That is fucking weird.
That is a crystal brain moment.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, mo. All right. So I said I was wearing Vera Wang, which I never say to him, but I had no idea that guy wore Vera Wang.
Heard you bring up Vera Wang.
I didn't know I didn't know Vera Wang made anything other than wedding dresses and look
by red carpet gowns.
Yeah. So I don't think I was smelling him. But even if I was smelling
him, what does it matter? You wouldn't have known.
I don't know.
That's crazy.
Pure weird coincidence. And then why is Drew wearing Vera Wang perfume before he leaves the house to come see me?
The only
to get you in the mood.
Pure wild coincidence with the a drop of Vera Wang's very popular and that's the go-to. Who are you wearing? Vera Wang.
That
accounts for 1% of that pretty wild coincidence. I'm not trying to write it off as like, everyone knows that. No, it's pretty crazy coincidence.
I was saying Vera Wang for comedic effect I realized it'd be a funnier one than saying Armani, because that's sort of plausible.
And we know that it's a real coincidence because we know Dr. Drew wasn't doing anything for comedic effect.
No, we do know that.
True.
No,
he stole a punchline.
He's the enemy of comedy.
Speaking of coinkadink, I wasn't going to bring this up, but because we're talking about coinkadinks, yesterday when we talked to Sheree Moore from the trucking company, she was specifically talking about 18-wheelers, things that I never think about. I have no reason to think about. And on my phone, I get, you get like a one line headline of, you set your notification. So if an email comes in, it'll give you like the first line or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, so whatever, if we're breaking news or whatever, I have my phone right here. And we're talking to Sheree and I look down and I saw an email from a name I've never seen before. It was a stranger who contacted me and it said, I'm driving an 18-wheeler. And I was like,
wow.
Oh, are we streaming this live?
Wow.
And so I kind of looked down just to see what it was. And it was somebody who I didn't know. It was a listener who said, I'm driving an 18-wheeler right now, so it's not conducive to typing. Sorry for the typos. And this is a little plug, but I don't mean to. He said, I know you're involved in that children's camp with the children's hospital. Can you please send me the information because I'm driving an 18-wheeler, so I can't write it down.
Oh, I got some tires.
And that was, I thought, are we live? And that's when I was confused as to how we were streaming or not streaming.
Yeah, I guess we're going to have to get used to this because there's so much information. It's flying so fast that back in the day, what were your opportunities of a coincidence? When I was a 10-year-old kid, where were the coincidences? You'd wear the same color T-shirt your friend Timmy wore when you showed up at school. That was our coincidence. Hey, I'm wearing a shirt and my shirt is the color of your shirt, because there was no way to communicate with anybody when you were just sitting home. All you could ever have is the invisible coincidences that probably weren't. Like, you go, man, a Sizzler commercial comes on or Bob's Big Boy commercial comes on. And I go, I was just thinking about Bob's Big Boy. Like, that was about about as close as we. No,
we kind of have to trust you on that.
Stuff wasn't verifiable. There was no texting coming in at the same time and blah, blah, blah. But it's digital.
It's all time stamped now.
Yeah.
I think somebody tweeted me a picture of my old house and a picture of my new house with a funny little thing. And I was having a conversation moments earlier about, oh man, now I live here and I used to live there and I never want to go back to that old house or whatever. And then I popped my computer open and someone had mashed up some rap song with pictures of my house, old and new. And I was literally just saying out loud, I never want to go there, my old house. That's where I come from. I walked into my office, opened the computer, and just hit Twitter, yeah. and that's what was on Twitter.
Wow.
Someone did the inverse of the how it started, how it's going meme.
Right, right. So with a song to match, Max Power, Gary knows it, I guess. Gary?
Yeah, it's got the Drake started from the bottom, now we're here song. Mm. Hold on 1 second.
Right, which is funny. All right, we got some calls up there. Let's see. I'll hop down. I'll start at the bottom. I'll work my way up at the top like the song says.
Start from the bottom.
Oh, is that Drake? Yeah, like Drake says. Porter, 49, Bristol, Tennessee.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Good. Is Bristol, Tennessee where they started the dance, the Bristol Stomp, which turned into a hit 50 song about the Bristol Stomp?
I honestly couldn't tell you because I'm originally from Maryland, and I went from Maryland to Florida, Georgia, out to L.A. My first stop in L.A. was actually in North Hollywood, and I was off Otsego, like you were talking about
Otsego
yesterday.
Otsego Street.
Literally, you turn right and three places down, there was an apartment building there. So
yeah,
the many apartment buildings there.
Many apartment buildings.
The Bristol Stomp comes from Bristol, Pennsylvania.
Not Bristol, Tennessee.
No, Bristol, Tennessee.
Yeah, okay. It's going to be difficult because he has like sleigh bells attached to his ears. The thing I forgot.
Porter Wagner lived in Tennessee. He started with Dolly Parton.
We all know.
Wow.
The story I forgot, I didn't tell you guys the other day, is I was living on Houston Street in North Hollywood for my whole life. And at some point, my dad moved out and he bought a house on Hartsook Street, which is five streets away. Same address. I misunderstood where my dad's new house was because I was 13 and dumb. And I thought it was on Otsego Street, which is one street in front of it. So at some point, my mom... I was driving me to the new house or talking to me about it, and she said, what street is it on? And I said, it's on Otsego Street. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to remember the name of that street. And she said, well, just think Ot, like Otter Siegel, Otsego, Otsego Street, Otter Siegel. This is one of the most important conversations I've ever had with my mom.
And she actually taught you something.
Otter Siegel. Like it's Otsego. Otter Siegel. And I went, okay, yeah, that's how I'll remember it. And as we were driving toward it, she was starting to turn on Otsego, and I go, oh, no, it's not this one. It's the next one, which is Hartsook, which screwed up her whole. So it was really, I think that conversation typifies the relationship I've had with my mom throughout the years.
Yeah.
Even the good conversations were pointless. All right, so this guy lived there, and he's got a bad connection, so I'm moving on. All right,
let me. You never forgot that your house was not on Otsook Street.
I'll tell you where it's not. That's right.
Otsego, Otsook.
Otsook. Well, thank God I was on Hartsook, because at the end of the street, a year or two after I moved in, a couple with the last name Ringwald moved in at the very end, and that was some good living for a young ace, man. All right, let's see. Oh, sorry. Let me just go in reverse order here. Brett, the electrician from 32 from San Diego.
Ace man, get it on.
Get on, man.
Hey, ace man, I've been listening to you for quite some time. Hi, Bald. Hi, Gina.
Hi. Hey.
I was just wondering, Ace Man, I've never ever heard you really ever say the word dude. Is there anything behind that, you being a SoCal guy?
Okay. Is Alex on, by the way?
No, we're going to call him.
He's coming on. Oh, okay.
You've always preferred Broseph.
I don't like using the stuff that everyone uses all the time. It's also kind of a slippery slope. It's like saying, you know, maybe after everything, you just go into that
like.
That thing and like. And it just felt kind of lazy and uninteresting to me. So I don't use dude because here's the deal. There's a lot of dumb dudes who use dude. So I didn't want to use dude. But it is the ultimate. You know how people, you know, we all know people in our lives when you go, hey, man, you're late. This is like the second time you've been late this week. And they go, you're late. We went out the movie. You didn't even catch the trailers. Like there's the people who just do the throwback, like whatever whatever you say to them. Like if you go, could you, hey, man, your dishes were all up in the sink. Hey, dude, you left your dishes out the other. You know, all they do is say a version of what you're asking them to do or accusing them of doing. All they do is say you do it. Too.
Yeah,
it could be
back.
It could be anything. Well, I mean, the ultimate version of that was when I was doing my home improvement show with Ray, and Ray just kept saying, dude, and hey, dude, and whatever, dude. And I said, Ray, since when did you start saying dude so much? And he goes, you say it all the time. I thought, wow, that's just like a reptilian reaction from 9 years old, because I'm the guy who never says dude. But it was so reflexive. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, boom. It's like skee balls. Just throw it in. It's just coming right back at you. It's just whatever throws in, coming back at you. If I could go, I'd go, you know, if I said, why do you wear a kilt so much? He'd go, why do you wear a kilt all the time? Like, well, I think it's something that 9-year-olds do that we try to train people away from. But I think we've all had those roommates.
Oh yeah,
it's the first baby level of defense mechanism,
and it's sad that it hasn't been washed out of a lot of adults. Our guest Alex Berenson can probably comment on this because it happens a lot in politics. They call it whataboutism, like, oh, this guy did that. Well, what about your guys? Like, all right, we can do this forever, or we can address the issue at hand.
Yeah, or they'll do the, you know, it's always the roommate where you go, hey, I came home and all the lights are on, man. They go, I came home 2 weeks ago. You had the ceiling fan. It's just, it's always that. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Now as it may.
We got a smart guy here we can talk to, Alex Berenson. Alex?
Hey, Adam. How are you?
Thanks for joining us. I know you're crunched for time today. I'm a fan of yours. You have a book out called Unreported Truths About COVID-19 and Lockdowns, Part 2, Update and Examination of Lockdowns as a Strategy. So I want to talk a little about that. But first, I think we were all introduced to you when you wrote a book about marijuana and about how it wasn't sort of harmless or inert. And so you... Do you come?
It's definitely not inert,
right? No, I'm with you. It's kind of interesting. The pot campaign, in a way, mirrors many of the things that are going on with COVID-19, but sort of in the opposite. The pot campaign was, oh, come on, this is harmless, and the COVID-19 campaign is, this going to kill you all. But it's the truth is still closer to the middle. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, for cannabis, look, there's real serious psychiatric harms that don't get talked about. You know, they don't affect everybody, you know, and I would say, obviously, most people who use moderately certainly are going to be just fine. And it's just as true with alcohol or just like alcohol. But that does not mean it's not a dangerous drug, right? With COVID, actually, and one of the reasons, I think I've become so engaged in this, you know, in this debate is because I see exactly what you're saying, which is I see a lot of people in the media and a lot of people who supposedly take science very seriously, just, distorting or ignoring science for political, reasons. And so what we know about COVID, what we know about SARS-CoV-2 is that it's real. It's dangerous to some people, especially to, you know, elderly people and people who have lots of comorbidities, and that most people who get it, who aren't in those categories, well, most people who get it will recover. Almost everybody who gets it who's not in those categories should recover. Now, there's always going to be exceptions. There's going to be people who get sick, and there's going to be some, you know, unfortunate minority of people who do die. But that's true of the flu, and that's true of other illnesses, too. And we've never had a reaction like this. And it's interesting today. So, you know, I've written these two lockdown booklets or these two booklets about the virus. You know, the first one really about death and the second one about lockdowns. And I'm considering working on a third one, which is about masks and schools. And in some ways, just to go back to sort of the whole mental health issue, there really is a mental health crisis among kids and teenagers right now. And it seems to be, you know, we've had this. There's evidence that that's been going on for a while. But, you know, COVID and the lockdown seem to have really accelerated it. And I think it's, you know, it's dangerous. And, you know, people don't want to talk about if their kids wind up, you know, having a suicide attempt and wind up in a psychiatric facility, or they don't want to talk about if their kids, you know, drop out of school, or if their kids, you know, if they, God forbid, if they kill themselves, or if they OD. You know, these are issues that, you know, families don't like to discuss. And with the schools not open, I think people don't have any clue about how bad this may be getting. Right now we don't have good statistics, but there's evidence out there that, you know, mental health for teens and young adults and even kids who should be healthy, you know, who should be just starting their lives has really been affected by this.
So Alex, just to take it back a little bit, cause I was sort of thinking about your construct and, you know, COVID-19 aside or pot aside, are you, you're a journalist and you investigate, and do you find yourself sort of pushing against the norm? Do you find yourself just watching mainstream forms of journalism and thinking, why are they going this direction? And are is a bit of a contrarian, or how do you view yourself? And have you always kind of looked at that as your job?
I mean, I've always been, you know, I think there's two kinds of reporters in general. There's outside reporters and inside reporters, and they both are important. You know, the inside reporter is the person who goes into the White House and, you know, is nice to Donald Trump or whoever, you know, is in there and gets him talking and, you know, and ultimately gets him on the record, maybe saying more than he meant to say. Kind of butters him up, that kind of stuff. That's not what I am. I'm an outside reporter. I view institutions skeptically. I view, you know, people's motives skeptically. I view myself skeptically, hopefully, because you should have, you know, a degree of self-skepticism as a reporter or as anybody. And I look for, you know, documents. I look for hard evidence. I look for people who don't want to talk. And I try to, you know, try to find out what's going on. And that's what I've always been. And that's what I was when I was a reporter at the New York Times, too. You know, people say investigative versus not investigative, but that's a little bit, it's to me, the distinction has always been outside versus inside. So now I don't work at the New York Times anymore. And I'm an outside reporter, even when it comes to the New York Times. And I see a lot of stuff that they've done, you know, certainly covering COVID, that just perplexes me.
Well, I saw, so another subject is now sort of tech and censorship of voices, oftentimes like yours, who disagree with the sort of status quo, say a subject like masks or returning to schools or Sweden or something like that, the people that are pushing back against the status quo. So yes. You were on Tucker the other night, and you were sort of talking about masks not being effective, or at least not effective to the degree they're pushed in the mainstream media. And then Tucker Carlson, I think, then put that up on Facebook, the report from the CDC. And I guess Facebook said partially true or fact check negative or whatever it is. I'll play the clip. It's a 50-second sound clip. But I also, as a journalist, so there's two kinds of hats you wear. One hat is I want to go find the truth, and that's great. But now the other hat you have to wear is, why are these things I'm discovering being pushed against so hard or taken down or deemed dangerous or inaccurate? I'll play the clip and then tell me where you think we're heading here.
Last night in the show, we questioned whether masks are really effective at the transmission of the coronavirus, for example. And as we did that, we cited data directly from the CDC. We pulled it off their website, as well as other scientific sources. Science Magazine, for example. One study found that more than 70% of patients who contracted the coronavirus said they had always worn a mask. Another 14% said they usually did. We told you that last night. We posted that segment on Facebook. Today, we learned that Facebook is calling our reporting, quote, partly false. We quoted the CDC. They restricted the distribution of the post to prevent people from seeing it. Again, we can't say this enough. The data that we put on television last night were from the Centers for Disease Control. We used their numbers. We didn't make them up. But Facebook censored it.
Yeah, so what about that element of what we're doing?
Okay, that's crazy. It is crazy that Facebook would do that. It's crazy that Twitter is taking, you know, reports from the New York Post about Hunter Biden, whether you like Hunter Biden or you don't like Hunter Biden, and saying that, you know, that they're false and they can't be tweeted out. The big tech is they are headed for a disaster on this, okay? Because they have always said we're not responsible for the content of what people post, right? And that's, you know, people post so much stuff. They post revenge porn of their exes, or they, you know, they might post, you know, a secret group that has a, you know, incendiary, you know, comments about X, Y, or Z,
yeah,
or racist.
Facebook
or
just in trouble for
we're
being
not responsible.
For like
now they're saying they're responsible for it.
Sorry, go ahead, Brian.
I was going to say, yeah, wasn't Facebook just in trouble for, like, you know, being a haven to, you know, extremist groups, white nationalists, et cetera, et cetera? Now they're getting it from both sides.
Well, that's why they're pivoting so hard right now, because I even have a story that they're cracking down on Holocaust deniers. So now they're really trying to steer this giant ship around as quickly as they can, it seems like.
Right. So, but that's really dangerous, okay? They are effectively a utility and a monopoly. Okay, they have incredible market power. They have, you know, there's no other social network that, you know, that has attempted the reach of Facebook. You know, there's no other video, you know, website that has attempted the reach of YouTube. These are incredibly powerful engines. And if they're going to be in the business of curating content, then they're publishers. And if they're publishers, they're responsible for all of it. It's either all of it or none of it. And I don't think they want to be in the business of being responsible for all of it. But they've made a decision that, you know, they're getting a lot of heat from the left. And I think internally, you know, a lot of people who work at these places are young and, you know, and sort of woke and left leaning, and they don't want to fight that battle. But they're squeezing content. But I think they are making an enormous long term mistake.
Well, there's also now an interesting era because tech, you know, and Twitter and whoever pulls off the story from the New York, I guess it was the New York Post about Hunter Biden.
But, sure, sure.
Right. And now, look, that story has a lot of interesting things that sound valid and has a lot of hanky things that sound like it was cooked somewhere in some
by agree.
Right.
It's
There's a lot
you know,
of
it's certainly got some, you know,
it's got
on.
It's right. got a lot of it's got a lot of part A and part B into it. It's got a lot of smoking gun if you hate Biden, and it's got a lot of come on, consider the source if you like Biden. So it's one of those stories that has a lot in it. But when they pull it down and then they go to the Biden camp and they go, what about these allegations? Then the Biden camp goes, it wasn't even good enough for Twitter. Twitter pulled it down. Which means you don't really have to answer the question anymore. It's like, come on, those guys pulled it down. So what else do you need to know?
And then, you know, and you get a lot of conventional media saying, well, this is just, you know, Russian disinformation campaign. Here's the thing, okay? Whoever you're going to vote for, Hunter Biden is a national security risk, okay? And he's a drug user. He's, you know, an admitted heavy drug user who is soliciting money from foreign companies. Okay, that, you know,
but you don't think he's a risk. He's
not that does not mean his father can't be the president of the United States. It means his father has a right and a duty to address these concerns. And here's the thing. When you say this about Donald Trump's kids, nobody at the New York Times disagrees that those are legitimate issues that need to be discussed. The Trump family's connections with foreign companies. So why is Hunter Biden's connections, knowing that he has this personal, you know, habit that, you know, that's very expensive or has had it in the past, why are those questions off the table? This is an example of the kind of hypocrisy that both conventional and social media are engaging in right now. It is not okay.
Well, last 25 seconds here, masks. What have you found out sort of yay or nay with masks?
It's what Tucker said. For the general public, there's basically no evidence that universal masking is valuable. Okay, it may be valuable in certain narrow instances. It may be valuable if you wear an N95 for you and wear it properly. But in terms of reducing broad transmission of this, just look at California, okay? Universal mask mandate, it looked just like the rest of the Sun Belt. Look at France. They had a mask mandate. Suddenly they have terrible, you know, growth in cases. There's too much there's too many ways that this virus is transmitted that masks don't stop for anybody who's looked at it seriously to believe that masks are any kind of silver bullet. Maybe they help on the margins, but that's very different than what we've been told, and that's very different than mandating that everybody wear them all the time.
Well, as the Jewish doctor once said, how could it hurt?
Well, okay. And if you want to wear it for that reason, I get it.
No,
that's
I don't.
Different than making everybody.
I agree. I think what you and I, our perspective on masks is not that there is zero effect and not that amount isn't positive. It feels like a sort of a metaphor of an overreach for government. It feels like a physical manifestation of how bad this thing is that everyone wears. Like it's a physical, it's a scarlet letter, for lack of a better term. But what I'm saying is I leave my neighborhood and I see people everywhere with masks and it's like COVID, COVID, COVID. Meanwhile, we're walking outside, it's 100 degrees and no one's in danger and no one got it. Or if they did get it, they recovered quickly. So why this huge sort of affair around the fear? Why not approach it more realistically and a little more practically? I mean, we're canceling. Can I just keep you for another 30 seconds?
Sure.
We're canceling.
Sure, sure, sure.
We got our mayor. He's basically saying trick-or-treating's no bueno. Halloween, here's what you have to do.
When all you do is wear masks.
I know.
And, you don't go inside anyone's houses.
Andy.
No, listen, they're canceling Halloween. They're canceling schools into 2021 right now. We are destroying our children for this.
It is wrong. So the mask, to me, is a visible reminder of why we need to keep the schools shut, except for all these people who are outside don't need to wear the mask. See, if everyone took their mask off and walked their dog down the horse trail, then everyone would be thinking, why the fuck are the schools not open? But as soon as we see everyone in masks, we go, oh boy, we got a problem, because it's a visible, tangible reminder that they like pushing that message to us. I don't know what their big picture plan is. There's no fucking reason why my kids' school shouldn't be open. I walked into my kids' rooms as my kid was laying down at 10 o'clock, zooming on his bed, like still under his covers. There's no reason why he shouldn't be at school right now. It's insane.
It's insane. You're right. And you're right about the mask, too. It is a metaphor. It is an effort to scare it. And that's why it needs to be fought. And, you know, the schools, there's 100 different ways we can talk about the schools being closed is insane. Here's my favorite, which is, you know, in many districts, because parents do have to go to work, some schools are offering paid childcare. You know, you can pay a couple $100 a week and your kid will be taught in the school in a, quote, remote learning center, a classroom with the teacher not there. So their kids in school and there's a child care worker there, but not the teacher. What is that?
It's what you would do if you had retarded overlords ruling your society. Can we play the Garcetti Halloween clip? And do you have the Thanksgiving one, too? Because now we got Thanksgiving issues coming. He just dropped this one today. Sorry.
I got let's do the Halloween one.
Okay.
First.
And since it's mid-October now, it means thinking about new ways to mark Halloween this year. We simply can't go and have our typical traditions that we usually enjoy so much. Halloween gatherings, events, or parties with people outside your household are
not
prohibited, even if they happen outdoors. Carnivals, festivals, live entertainment, and haunted house attractions are not allowed either. Door-to-door trick-or-treating is not recommended, as it makes social distancing nearly impossible. And the same goes for what's called trunk-or-treating, where children go from car to car instead of from house to house, since it's difficult to avoid that very same crowding and sharing of food. Believe me, as a father, I know how disappointing
By the way, the first Halloween on a Saturday with a full moon and a blue moon, but everybody make sure you hunker down inside.
Trunk or treating,
we'll see
too
how
dangerous.
Many people, trunk or treating sounds bad. Let me leave you with one last thought, which is somebody wrote a guy named Neil Pollack wrote something last week, or I think it was either last week or the week before, pointing out that
all across the United States. Okay, this was, he like looked at the sort of live out arts calendar nationally, and he found like six events. You know, three were in Utah, and then there was like this sad outdoor concert in Austin, Texas. You know, socially distanced. We have destroyed the live arts. Okay, which is another thing that, you know, young people, guess what? They like to do. There are no more concerts. There are no more plays. There's no more, like, you know, there's no more, there's barely any movies. But in terms of live art, live music, it's dead. And when are we getting that back? What are we doing?
We were trying to do, the Comedy Store was cleared to do comedy outdoors in the parking lot. The city they're in, West L.A., approved it, and L.A. City came in and shut it down. Outdoor stand-up comedy in the parking lot of the Comedy Store.
Alex, West Hollywood.
Sorry, West Hollywood instead of West L.A. Mm-hmm. Alex Berenson, the book, Unreported Truths About COVID-19 and Lockdowns, Part 2. Thanks for joining us. I know you're slammed today.
Thanks for having me on.
It's available now on Amazon as well. All right, so we'll put him on hold there.
I dare ask, what's the Thanksgiving thing?
Oh, yeah, Chris was looking. I never found that.
I didn't find that.
Well,
and Christmas is canceled.
It should be in the same press conference. It's another press conference?
It must be. I'm in the transcript, and I'm not seeing the word Thanksgiving in that particular one.
It dropped today, I think.
Okay, over. I'll keep looking. Sometimes the transcript is wrong. So
see what he had to say. But, I mean, you get the – it's actually it's a little kookier than Halloween. Halloween was just like, don't go outside, don't trick or treat, don't trunk or treat, don't celebrate, don't do anything.
Don't share a turkey. Everyone get their own individual 10-pound turkey.
But the Halloween one was like, but you can stay home and draw things. You know what I mean?
That's what, like, we do every day.
Thanks.
Or you can hide candy in the backyard. Like,
do art.
Yeah. It was basically as about as good as those, you know, tips for a hangover remedy. Don't drink. Okay. Thank you. Yes. I can sit home any day of the week and draw things with my kids if I so choose. Yes.
Have you guys ever had someone do the Eric Garcetti super condescending? Well, you can't do this, but just go ahead and do this.
No, when we talked about that. Yeah. So much worse.
When I was at the when I was a screening calls for K-Rock, right? I was like 24. Mm-hmm. I was making probably $11 an hour or something like that, maybe 9 or something. Anyway, they do their Kevin and Bean singles cruise, right? Like, you know, if you're single, you can go on the boat, you go out in the harbor.
Catalina, me and Jimmy went on that thing.
Yeah, it's a party. And I was screening calls, like literally next, I shared a window with Kevin and Bean, and I was like talking to their producer, like, hey, you go and 300 people go, can I have a ticket to this thing? And like, maybe we'll see. And then like the day before, she was like, no, can't do a ticket, but just go to a bar. Like, thank you. That's one of my many options for not going on the Kevin and Bean cruise.
The worst is the dietetic version of that. Yeah. So there is you want to avoid the hangover. Don't drink. There's that one, which is okay. That'll be a wonderful New Year's Eve. The next one is the substitute, especially in the diet thing. Like, you go, oh man, I'm really craving some of that Gino's Chicago style deep dish pizza. And they go, okay, well, why don't you just take a leaf of cabbage and you sprinkle Parmesan on top? It's like, that's not going to work for this. That's not going to work for this. Okay. You can look for that, Max Zapata. I'll hit stamps.com here. As we adjust to the new normal, we still need to be smart about how we do business. Luckily, Stamps.com makes things easier. I've used Stamps.com around here for a million years. Everything we've sent out, years, merch, books, paperwork, doesn't matter. Whether you're a small business sending invoices, an online seller shipping products, or just working from your home, you need to mail stuff, and that's where Stamps.com comes in. Lets you buy and print U.S. postage for any letter or package 24/7 at home, 5 cents off every first-class stamp, and up to 62% discounts on USPS and UPS shipping rates as well. Special offer, 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the homepage and type in Adam. That's stamps.com. Enter Adam. All right. Let's see. We got a break. We got, what's our, I don't know, see our schedule here.
We got an Eat Your Feelings.
We got to Eat Your Feelings coming up. Okay, James Lindsay. All right. Why don't we break and we'll come right back with Eat Your Feelings.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace man, get it on. Went to dinner with the wife and kids today. Had the super cool 40-year-old waiter who didn't want to write anything down and was just listening as we placed our orders. Of course, missed a couple sides, missed a couple drinks. By the end, I said, look, man, you got to write stuff down. What did he do? Did he internalize it and say, you know what, you're right? No. He said, sorry, man, sometimes we make mistakes. The land of the losers. Get it on, man.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Maxipata's restaurant I used to work at required that they memorize everything.
Yeah, any table with six or less people, they said, you just got to do it off the top of your head, and it impresses them. And I hated doing it because I always forgot, especially because everyone modifies their orders.
Oh, it, you. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah, can you imagine me doing it?
Well, the thing is if you're at a place and you're going numbers, like I'll have the number two, the enchilada combo, or the number seven.
Great.
So be it. But even then, write it down. But everyone these days, everyone tweaks their shit a little bit. It's the new world order. When we used to go out to dinner, not that I did, but when I used to see TV shows where families were depicted going out to dinner, they didn't modify everything. There is no such thing of going out to dinner. Look, you go out to
dinner. I'll have the burger.
You go out to dinner with Dr. Drew and you order the whatever salad. And then he says to the person, is there onion or garlic in that? And then they go, there is. And then he'll go, can you put it on the side? Because everything is modified. Everything is bespoke. Everything is customized. With that in mind, write stuff down. First off, I'm not impressed when you memorize my order. I am devastated when you fuck it up. So let's weigh not impressed versus devastated. And also, has that ever been the topic of conversation on the ride home with the family? God, I got the chimichurri, a casserole, and that guy just, boom, steel trap right to his head. And also, if you're a 40-year-old dude and you're waiting on me and my family, I'm guessing your mind isn't a steel trap. I'm guessing there may have been some issues, perhaps addiction. So write it down, because I actually get anxiety when you don't write it down. It's the opposite. It's not, wow, I'm confident. This guy's a go-getter. He's a crackerjack. I'm sitting there going, oh, fuck. I modified this burger 10 ways to Sunday. Is this ever going to work? Write it down. Sorry. Couple of calls, each feelings, just get through some of these. There's Joey, 39, Brooklyn.
What's going on, Ace, Gina, Bald? How's everything?
Joey from Brooklyn. Hi, guy.
Hey, guy.
What's going on?
Not much. I wanted to get your thoughts on, Brooklyn has been out of control, Cuomo and de Blasio, of course. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the updates of today, where 100 NBC Universal cast and employees are boycotting NBC's airing of Trump's town hall tonight because they find it. They said it wasn't, that, to quote them, it wasn't bipartisan. It's just, it's not good for us to have it at the same time as the other debate. I guess they don't have DVR or whatever, but they're crying about it. All these woke left actors. And the such, many of them I like, but I mean, at this point, it's an avalanche of snowflake that I can't take anymore. And I want to get your thoughts on it. I actually tweeted you guys the link if you wanted to take a look.
All right. Couple things. Not everything you disagree with should provoke an action. You know what I mean? Like you go, I don't like this guy and I don't like his words. And that can be true. Two things can be true at the same time. You can hate this guy and you cannot protest or join, sign a petition or whatever. Not everything requires an action. This whole get out of the second a debate is this is a horrible thing for Trump. He's way behind.
I agree.
He screwed the pooch on the first debate. Could have really come back and taken a different tact or approach in the second debate. I don't believe Biden has all the answers, but if you don't let him answer any of the questions, then you're going to lose that debate. So getting out of the second one when look, there's nothing Trump can say or do at a rally or a town hall that's going to change anybody's vote anymore at this point. I do believe, and I believe he's way behind in the polling. There's really, to me, only one path. Like, it doesn't, him going out and campaigning, that's preaching to the choir, the town hall, that's not gonna move the needle. The only path to victory for Trump, as far as I could see it, was the last two debates, and he would have to destroy Biden in those two debates, or Biden would have to self-destruct. He'd have to have a little anger issue meltdown, or really just get caught.
A real moment with stumbling.
A real moment. Like
recently when he said he was running for Senate?
Yeah.
Way worse than that, honestly.
The point is the only path to victory for Trump is to do two more debates with Joe Biden and whatever the word count is at the end of the debate, Biden's should be 65% to Trump's 35%. If that was the path, that's the only thing. And if you're going to scrub one of those debates off the calendar, that's insane. Now, I do think Trump got fucked. I don't know why he couldn't go sit behind the plexiglass and do the debate in person. He's fine. That's fine. Trump feels like he's screwed.
They wanted to do an online debate, and he didn't want to be muted.
No. So what Trump did, if you think about the Biden campaign, Trump played into it perfectly. So the debate, you know, committee said, "Oh no, can't do anything in person." Now, that's foolish because we can socially distance everybody. We can put up the plexiglass, and Trump's not infectious right now, or he's not infecting others. So
there are certainly ways around it.
Yeah, well,
or modifications that can be made.
Well, there's kind of two things in my mind the way I look at it. One is we can do the things to prevent the spread with the plexi and the distancing and what have you. But secondly, if we medically evaluate him and he's not contagious or doesn't have it, then it's kind of done and done. Like, we'll do it and he doesn't have it or can't spread it that way.
He's the safest person in the room.
Right.
I agree with you, but that would require, right, a third-party evaluation. And do you think he would submit to that, honestly?
I don't know. I don't know how the third party is.
I don't think they would take his doctor's word for it. I think they would have to have their doctor, right?
He is considered, even by, I think, by mainstream media and stuff, not infectious or over it or has the antibody or is done with the whatever. Max Zapata can look it up. I don't think we'd need to take his word for it. I think there's medical evidence that he's just not able to spread anymore or infectious. But we can look.
You know what would have been a win-win for everybody? If they did do the debate that night, they both got in their plexiglass tubes, and when their time runs out, the glass frosts over.
Blanks them out.
That would have been perfect.
Yeah.
I think you're right about, I've read a lot of analysts and experts who said Trump's best chances from here on out were to dominate these next debates. Like, there aren't that many opportunities to have that kind of impactful moment, and the debates are the kind of the best last chance. And as it pertains, you know, vis-a-vis the debates, I think you're right.
So, what else? What other avenue is there? And now, so here's what, you know, here's how it works. So his doctor, his White House doctor, says he's not infectious. Now,
Conley or
as nefarious as you think we all are, I and Conley or Trump, I don't think I don't think he can fake a note. Like, I don't think that doctor can say he's not infectious when he's infectious. I got to tell you, a surprising thing about most, like, doctors and lawyers and people I've talked to in my world, and I've said it with Dr. Drew a few times, like, hey, can you talk to someone? And he just goes, I can't do that. I mean, I could talk to him, but I can't talk to you.
But we have evidence of this, though. Before he was even president, when he was a candidate, he dictated word for word that letter from the doctor. You know, he'll be the healthiest man ever to take the. Like, there's evidence that this has happened. Why? And now that he's president, I imagine it made that much easier.
I can't. Well,
it's
so
hypothetical, of course.
No, but I mean, what you're saying is the president and the president's doctor are saying he's fine. He's not infectious when he's possibly infectious.
I'm just saying the possibility exists. I don't think the doctor was. I have no reason to believe this doctor was faking this information.
And even if his own doctor did this, there's no way that the group of five doctors at Walter Reed, you'd convince all five of them to do that together. I don't think so.
I think of myself as cynical, but I don't think we can do this. I don't think the White House doctor can proclaim this guy's over this or done with this or not infectious and still having testing positive or what have you. I can't see that. But did the CDC, what'd you say, Max Panna?
Oh, so Trump met the CDC, quote, criteria for the safe discontinuation of isolation. And that was 5 days ago.
All right. So look, I don't think he's going to spread. I don't think he's infectious, but either way, he played right into Biden's hands because I do think Trump got fucked by the debate committee because he could have done this. He was fine. They should have done it. But they said, you know, go do it via Zoom. Trump got pissed off and said, fuck it, I'm going home, and then shot himself in the foot by saying, fuck it, I'm going home. He got fucked, and then he fucked himself. That's basically what happened here.
And don't you think that the dueling town halls is the epitome of working harder, not smarter? Because if anything, what is that for? Just to energize your base?
Yeah, who,
neither of them are going to convince anyone of shit in this country.
Now,
so it's right. So dumb that they're even bothering. Trust me, I'm happy to work in a newsroom and get the sound bites, but this is so dumb for both of them.
There's one. Well, it's genius for Biden because of a third element, which is the only thing that would turn this ship around for Trump, let's say, he's not doing the debate, is a vigorous approach to vetting a lot of the stuff Biden says by the media. But the media doesn't really push Biden, doesn't push too hard, ask too many tough ones. The media is easier on him, and we're not going to draw a lot of that stuff out of him. He just says, I'm not answering, or it's been taken care of, or it's done, and they kind of move on. So if the media isn't dogged about really going after Biden, and Trump fans are Trump fans, and Biden fans are Biden fans, then all we're going to be left with is the debate, and Trump just canceled 33% of his debate. So basically it's like three debates, screwed the pooch in the first one, canceled the second. It's statistically not a strong way to play that hand. All right, but who knows? Maybe there's something I don't know. Either way, this thing, there's a new thing, and we're kind of talking about it with Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that. News outlets and networks, when people start going, you or college campuses, Ben Shapiro wants to come to your college campus, like, you shouldn't let that guy speak in this place, or you shouldn't give him this forum or this podium or this whatever. That to me is much more dangerous than whatever the person could be potentially saying. I would rather live in a society that had people say what they wanted to say, and then we would decide whether we liked it or believed it or not, versus a society that was going to pull the microphones off the stage and deem this person dangerous versus that person. Because that, and we talked about it on a show the other day, but that is a slippery slope. When you start really deciding whose opinion is worthy of being heard, that is scary. All right. And by the way, when there's that thing where it's like Trump says this and calls and makes people think, I've never met a person where Trump said something and the person took it to the bank. You know what I mean? Where they went like, yes, that guy, I'm gonna drink Clorox. That guy said it.
Two people did and died.
Two people.
Yeah. I mean, that was the crazy story. They drank the fish cleaning tank liquid.
Oh, no. I'm talking about injecting Clorox. Mm. The hydrochloroquine stuff for the aquarium tank cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a crazy couple that found hydroxychloroquine as one of the ingredients in the fish tank couple or something.
In the tank cleaner.
Didn't only the dude die or only the chick did?
Then there was some talk about maybe she was intentionally poisoning.
That's a great cover story.
Yeah, I know. I have no evidence of this. I just what I've read.
I will check in with Nancy Grace and find out as soon as I can.
Please. All right. Let's see. I don't know what that stupid Sam call is. I don't think I want to talk to him. Nobody's talking about Max Pata.
So, yeah, OnlyFans is that site where you it's like Patreon. People pay for you to post. Like,
that was the Disney star.
Right.
Guy's a mechanic, and he's thinking of, and he does modeling on the side, and he's thinking of going the
whole
way.
I'm sure it's super legit.
OnlyFans.
All right. Well, we got to do Eat Your Feelings. So just, you know what? Let me just punch up Sam. I don't know. Now he's off. Sam, you gone? All right. He hung up on himself. anything about Thanksgiving and press conference?
I'm looking, though.
I don't know how that works. How's that work? He comes out.
Where did you hear it?
I heard it on the radio when I was driving in. He was talking about Thanksgiving. You type in like Garcetti Thanksgiving protocols.
Of course.
And
have to make a dozen individual Cornish game hens.
For what it's worth, I did a Google news search for Garcetti Thanksgiving and nothing. Hmm.
It's a weird. I can't figure the internet out because we have the mayor of one of the biggest, most populous cities in the world, and he comes out and does a press conference, and everything is just shared digitally these days. So why doesn't it exist?
It's very odd, and I would say what an awful move it is to ruin everyone's Halloween and then ruin everyone's Thanksgiving.
Then go right into Thanksgiving. All right,
that's why this year I don't mind that everyone's in the Christmas spirit in June because people just want something to look forward to.
I agree.
By all means, go crazy.
All right, shall we do a little Eat Your Feelings? We've got an intro.
Gina Grad's Eat Your Feelings, brought to you by Home Chef.
It's time for Eat Your Feelings. Do some healthy eating with Gina's recipes.
So this was another delectable offering from Home Chef that I've been so fortunate to be hooked up with and get to try these. This recipe is for sesame pork bento bowls.
Mm.
Given the, it's easy, intermediate, or difficult, this is easy. And I always appreciate that because then I know someone can back me up when I say something so easy. This was a great one to do with someone who's maybe less skilled in the kitchen but wants to learn. I chose a 5-year-old because we love to cook together. I call him my little chef, and I'm always looking, obviously it's more work for me to find something for him to do. So it's great when there's a recipe like this where anyone who's a little timid in the kitchen but wants to get involved, I will give you a tip. If you have a kid or just someone who's all thumbs but still wants to help, two things are great: mixing sauces and anything to do with vegetables. Because at that point, they're not going to get, raw chicken on their hands. They're not going to be, messing with something that shouldn't be messed with. I said, he's great at peeling. I let him peel the carrots. And then I chopped everything. And I said, now you have to measure which cup says 1/2. You found it. Okay, dump that in. Which cup says 1/4? So he gets to dump it all in. He gets to mix everything. This was a really fun one to do with a partner or a kid or somebody who's maybe a little less advanced.
Kids love touching vegetables.
Oh, they do.
They love it. I gotta say,
even though this child did not spring from my loins, I am so proud to say that I taught him how to peel vegetables, and now he is a master at it. So he's great at it. Another thing I love that I know you love, Adam, is it makes such a difference in your meal when depending on how you cut the meat. This meat comes shaved. So it's shaved pork. So it's just those really delicate slices. Mm-hmm. And that's our fit. That's in the kids' bowl. That was his and he loved it. Just leave that up for a second. That's it's such a delectable way to consume like a pork, just very shaved and thin and a little bit crispy. Another thing, and I know I think Adam will agree with this and probably Brian too. I don't care what you're eating, top it with nuts. This one comes with peanuts that we chopped, and of course it made everything better. But I will do you not one better, like 15 better. You're gonna think I'm insane, and that's fine. But when we did another home chef way back when, there was a meal, I think it was risotto with roasted beets and toasted pistachios. Well, the kid fell in love with the toasted pistachios. And that's great. And I was only too happy to have him pile those on. Well, flash forward to a week later, we had taco night. And he goes, where are the roasted nuts? I said, that's not a taco thing. Please, please. So I got up. I took 3 minutes. I toasted some slivered almonds and said, there, here's your toasted almonds so you can tell me how terrible they are and you'll stop asking for them. Hey, well, guess what? They were delicious on tacos.
Gina.
Delicious.
Who is this child you speak of who's never been born, who loves handling fresh vegetables in a bowl, who wants more
toasted
almonds on his tacos?
Don't
get
me wrong.
Who is this person?
He's a picky eater, but there are a couple things like broccoli. He hates carrots. He loves broccoli.
Really?
So, yeah. He's just a little, he's a little mazik, as my people say. So toasted nuts, guess what? On a side note, they go with tacos. And anytime you can find anything to just literally just toast them up in the pan real quick, you'll notice when they're done because it'll start smelling like burnt popcorn if they're too toasted. Just real quick, lightly oiled, toast some nuts up in a pan, sprinkle it on anything, and it makes it so much more delicious. Everybody loved this. I think there's one more picture of my adult bowl, even though it's the same. And this was a wonderful meal and a great meal to prepare together.
Yeah.
Thank you, Home Chef.
Nice, man. Outro.
Eat your feelings. Do some healthy eating. With Gina's recipe.
Brought to you by Home Chef.
So visit homechef.com/Adam and get in on all these savings and deals.
And grain-free comfort food on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Grain-free comfort food on Instagram.
That's mine.
Gina, just watching you blossom and blossom. And it's just it's a little shop of horrors, man. You just keep going and going and gosh, maybe it's a bad reference, but the point is
suddenly Seymour
take over the city.
I need blood.
When Gina first started coming in here, first beeline right to the vending machine. Right to the vending machine.
Not even just a slog to the vending machine. I was just exhausted.
Shoulders
and
rolled.
Yeah.
It just exacerbated right to the vending machine.
Every day.
Grabbing some empty carbs and sitting on the sofa.
And staring in the middle distance.
Staring in the middle distance. And I thought, this can't be good. But none of my beeswax. And now look at you, baby.
Yeah.
See, this is the problem with me. You know what the problem with me is?
What?
Well, it's a three-hour show.
I go through life basically telling many people, hey, why don't you just do this? Like, why don't you change? Why don't you fix this? Like, why don't you get better? And then the lion's share of those people never do. But what they do is tell me to fuck off at some point and think I'm an asshole. But and then you talk to any therapist, psychologist, or reading book, Dr. Drew or whatever, and then they will tell you, oh, you can't expect people to change. You can't expect people to do everything. And I'm like, first things first, why not? Why can't you change? Why can't you be better? Why can't you do better? And I don't, and it's few and far between, but I have people in my life, and now Gina's one of them. And again, the ratio's bad. It's like every guy I went to high school with, and then Gina and Kevin Hench are basically the only two that turned out. But the point is,
it's insulting.
You do see people who do change. They do learn things. They get better. They focus. They focus on their diet. They get information. And then you see how their life goes. And you think, okay, so it's doable. Gina was walking in here 25 pounds heavier than she is now.
And really distraught about it and sad about it. And you know what you do when you're sad? You eat.
Right. That's right. And then now I see this version of Gina. So let that be a warning shot to all the people who always are telling me that people don't change. They don't change. They don't want to change. They're not going to listen to change. You can't tell them to change. You can't expect them to change. I don't know why. When did this become the sort of accepted dogma of our society, which is people don't change, and they certainly don't change if you ask them to change or something? It's like, what? Okay, great. You know, like, why is that so accepted? You know,
Well, sadly, it's true amongst a large portion of the population, but there are people who are in a smaller percentage, of course, that will embrace change or even, God forbid, seek it out. Like, hey, I'm going to try and do this year, or I'm going to whatever.
Well, not only that, what I've noticed is once that person gives up the Doritos and starts to embrace the change, then they get on a positive roll and it speeds up. And then they're doing things they couldn't have dreamt of doing 6 months earlier. All right, let's take a break. Dr. James Lindsay, author, mathematician, political commentator, is going to be on The Blower, and we'll talk to him right after this.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.